When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, this is Dahlia Lithwick, host of Slate's legal podcast, Amicus. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in Amicus's live show that we're hosting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, May the 14th. My colleague, Mark Joseph Stern, and I will be talking to some amazing guests, including Sherrilyn Ifill and a sitting state Supreme Court justice, all about how originalism, a relatively recently invented way of interpreting the Constitution, has taken over the Supreme Court and radically reshaped the law. It's been doctrinal rocket fuel for the conservative legal movement and facilitated the rolling back of abortion rights, the expansion of gun rights, and the obliteration of the separation of church and state. And as another wildly consequential Supreme Court term careers to its end, the court's originalists are on a tear. But there's something you can do about it, and we hope you'll join us in D.C. on May 14th to explore the possible pathways out of the current situation. Go to slate.com/amicuslive for tickets.
My husband and I, you know, experienced like a series of life upheavals and had to move back in with my parents into their Catholic rectory. But I could not continue to be a Catholic as an adult. That was not the correct path for me.
And so you kind of went the other way.
To hell? Yeah, I did.
You said it, I didn't.
I went to hell.
Welcome to How To. I'm David Epstein. You know that old saying, never discuss politics or religion in polite company? Well, we actually did an entire episode on how to talk politics without wrecking relationships. And that's tough. But arguing about your vision of the country with family? That's small potatoes compared to disagreeing about your vision of the universe. And talking religion can be really tricky when the beliefs you grew up with suddenly no longer fit. For our listener this week, religion has always been at the core of his identity. Until he decided it wasn't.
Hi, my name is Chris, and I'm from Canada.
Chris is 23 and works as a marketer, and he's also, well, the son of a preacher man.
My father's a minister, and both of my siblings have actually gone on to become ministers themselves. And I am the only one of them who has decided to leave my parents' religion.
Chris's family is Pentecostal, an evangelical denomination probably best known for speaking in tongues. And given his father's job, the family would move every few years. And while the parish would change, the church was always there right next door, an island of familiarity.
People like to say, as a pastor's kid, you slept underneath the church pews, right? Everyone I knew, everything I did sort of revolved around church.
At the time, what was your relationship with the faith like? Did you feel close to God, or that God was a large part of your life, or was it just sort of a culture you were floating along with?
So I had the intention when I was 16 to also go into ministry. It was just because that's all I had ever known. But then after I ended up leaving and going to university, I guess, and that's when I started to question things.
Is that fair to say that you're not observant anymore?
I haven't been observant for probably 2 or 3 years. It's been a bit of a tear between me and my parents. My siblings and I just don't talk about it. There's a bit of an unspoken tension there.
And that tension came to a head when Chris moved in with his girlfriend.
We met in university, and it was because I was moving in with my partner that we had to make that clear. This is who I am. So that was sort of the breaking point with my family.
How did your dad react to that?
My father is a very quiet man. He doesn't say much. My mother is the more outspoken in the relationship. She didn't say much as well, which is typically not a great thing.
When Chris first wrote into us, he described himself as the black sheep of his family.
Yeah, so I said that because that's a phrase that's often used in the church when somebody decides to leave. They call them the black sheep because they've gone off and left the flock, and now they're lost, right? And essentially, like, that's sort of how I feel with my family.
A few months ago, Chris and his girlfriend got engaged, and now as he prepares to start this new phase of life, he's desperate to make amends with his parents. On today's episode, how to leave your religion, but keep your family. When you're the black sheep, how can you forge a relationship with the rest of the flock while staying true to yourself? And we've got just the expert, the writer Patricia Lockwood, daughter of a boisterous, rock and roll loving Roman Catholic priest.
It was never like I had this ultimate break with my parents where it's like I lifted up, you know, like a stick with the words Catholic Church written on it and snapped it in half. Like, that never happened.
We'll find out what happened after this quick break.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
On Death, Sex, and Money, we feature interviews with you, our community of listeners, getting honest about uncomfortable things.
I developed an illness where it isn't safe for me to drive. A friend once said to me, sex is like air. You don't think about it until you're not getting enough. This is a similar sort of thing if you just replace sex with driving.
Listen to Death, Sex, and Money wherever you get podcasts.
We're back with our listener, Chris, who wants to leave his church, but not his family. Chris's decision to move in with his fiancée may have been the breaking point, but there are already cracks in the relationship with his parents. It was in college when Chris felt his life was becoming incompatible with the religion in which he was raised.
I think their views on homosexuality in particular, I mean, I'm bisexual myself, so that was one thing. And I was in sort of a bubble. Even in the small town I was in, I didn't have regular access to like high-speed internet. And I was so closed off from culture, and my parents heavily limited what we could watch, what we could see. So when I did go to university, I was able to explore that and really figure out who I was.
I mean, I don't think it's easy for anyone to have a conversation with their family about their sexuality. This case, much more difficult. Is that something that you've ever talked to them about or not?
No, it's not.
Honestly, Chris, it's like what you're describing right now, it's possible that we might be the same person. So everything you're talking about, I know and I understand.
In fact, Patricia Lockwood knows and understands a lot about uncomfortable subjects. She's a poet, novelist, and author of the acclaimed memoir, Priest Daddy.
Yeah, that bitch was like 350 pages long. So it's not like I just wrote a memoir. It's like, what is this, like the decline and fall of the Roman Empire? Clearly, I had so much to say about it.
The whole saga of the Lockwood family's religion began when Patricia's dad was a young atheist manning a nuclear submarine.
And apparently, like, your selection of movies that you can watch on a submarine is quite limited. They screened The Exorcist for the boys, like, dozens of times over the course of one patrol.
The power of Christ compels you!
I mean, like, if they did that to me, I would also probably convert, because, like, that is a fucking scary movie. I don't know if you've seen it, but he got really, really scared, and he, like, dropped to his knees, and he converted.
The power of Christ compels you!
Patricia's father was actually first ordained as a Lutheran pastor and only later converted. The church had to give him a special dispensation to become one of the rare Catholic priests who has a family. That's not the only way he's unusual.
He's very bombastic. He's addicted to electric guitars. He loves prog rock. He was in a band when he was a teenager where they would wear like matching red velveteen suits. He had like a huge fro at that time. And he's not what you would expect for a priest. But my upbringing was extremely Catholic, and my dad was a convert, and that meant a lot of times, like, converts can be pretty intense. So growing up as a teenager, I remember going to see the movie In and Out with a friend from youth group when I was, like, 15 years old, and, like, we staged a walkout because it was, like, this gay movie, and oh my God, can you even believe it, in, like, filthy Hollywood.
No.
My son's not gay.
No way!
No, how?
No dice!
I mean, like, I knew at the same time that I was not like those other people. Like, I am also bisexual, like, hell yes, but I was still enacting those same forms that they were enacting. And it's very powerful.
It's a little intense, yeah.
I myself, when I was a teenager, we spoke in tongues. I was part of a charismatic youth group. And I remember how there was, like, pressure within the group. You would be holding hands and you would open up your mouth and you would feel this compunction, this pressure to just, like, let anything fall out and call that speaking in tongues. I was very religious at that time, but that was one of my first experiences with, like, why do I feel compelled to do this?
Was it true that you were at one point thinking about becoming a nun or planning to become a nun?
Hell yes. Oh. I was very much thinking about becoming a cloistered Carmelite nun. And my father actually took me to visit the nuns. And I was going to, like, put that habit on and, like, live on top of an alp or whatever and, like, have that old lady sing at me for a really long time. And that was going to be my life, you know? Like, that's what I wanted.
Very similar to me. I was
planning on doing. Yeah, I'm sure that's what you want as well.
I was planning on doing missions work overseas.
Yes, yeah, totally.
Same thing.
But I did move more and more away, and it kind of coincided for me personally with, like, the huge breaking of the Catholic sex scandals in the United States. And it's not because those things were surprising to me. Like, I looked around the country and I was like, wait, I've always known about these guys. Like, I've always known that these guys get shuffled from parish to parish. But that was the thing that made it impossible for me to continue, for sure.
And how did that change your relationship with your parents?
We didn't ever really have a conversation about that. It's not like we ever sat down and said, you know, they asked me, Trisha, are you still Catholic? And I was like, actually, no, I'm not a Catholic anymore. And honestly, they're still kind of in denial about it. My father.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. My father thinks that you're just, like, a Catholic till you die. So, I mean, I think it's true that, like, you can, your parents can know these things and still not accept them. That's also a possibility. But it can also kind of take some of the pressure off, right? It does give you that freedom. Like, maybe your parents won't accept it. And if they don't, like, what are you so worried about?
Chris, why is this so important to you? You know, some people might just say, like, they don't, you know, take you as you are, then screw them. But why is this so important to you?
I don't know. I guess I want recognition from my parents that I am a good person and not just because I'm not religious.
Right.
I feel like they don't recognize the help that I do for the world outside of religion, if that makes sense. All the volunteer work that I do, my career, things like that.
Do you think that they do feel that you are a good person?
I really don't know if they think I'm a good person or not. But I know that they see me and me not being religious, and I see that them thinking that I'm a bad person and talking about that behind closed doors or even in public within their church.
Yeah. So. And I think it's also something you can internalize about yourself. Like, sometimes the question is not, do my parents believe that I'm a good person, but, like, am I a good person? Do I believe that I'm a good person outside of this religious framework?
Here's our first rule. Try to separate your parents' worries about you from your own worries about yourself. Are you only concerned that they don't think you're a good person, or are you anxious about that yourself? You might want to step back and sort that out.
And that's another part of this, is whether or not I think I'm a good person based on me not being religious.
Yeah.
I know that my family, when I've heard them talk about other people that have left the church in the past, they're talking about it in terms of, oh, I want this person to get saved again. And I know that that's going to be a continued conversation with my parents. And
right.
I don't want to feel pressure from them, I guess. How do I go about talking about that in a way that doesn't hurt them or our relationship?
The pressure Chris is describing is something that Patricia has felt intensely. And not just because of her upbringing, but because of the fact that in her 30s, she and her husband suddenly had to move back in with her parents. When we come back, Patricia opens up about what she learned from that experience and how Chris can talk to his parents about their relationship. Let's just say the discussion involves chastity cocoons. Stick around. We're back with Chris and our expert Patricia Lockwood. Several years ago, Patricia's husband Jason had an unexpected and very expensive surgery that wiped out their savings, forcing them to move in with Patricia's parents in Kansas City. Patricia knew moving back in would be a big deal, especially given how her parents reacted the first time she ever brought Jason home, before they were married.
Like, my parents absolutely wigged, and we had to sleep in the same room because there was, like, no other area available, and they made me sleep in a sleeping bag that they then put a comforter on top of, and he was on top of the comforter because I was like, I couldn't get out of the sleeping bag. Like, it was surprising that they didn't try to, like, put a chastity belt on me or something like that. So sometimes in these conversations too, or sometimes if your parents are weird about these things, that can actually help move you forward a little bit, because it's like, well, why are you, no, like, why am I like the sausage in the sleeping bag while my husband is like sleeping on top of this other blanket? It's because my parents are maybe like a little bit insane. That was kind of helpful for them to react in that way, because it helped me separate myself a little bit from them. Is that your experience at all, or are your parents a lot more normal?
You got to sleep in the same room?
I know. Isn't it amazing?
But in a chastity cocoon, after all.
And my mom's face was like purple, and, you know, it seemed like she was going to have a coronary. And she was, it was like we were really worried about her health. But so it sounds like it's something similar for you, that's not even like, that would never be on the table.
No. Even still, even while engaged, we're still separate rooms. Yeah.
Well, tell them about the sleeping bag thing, because it's quite a deterrent. Like, I did have a hard time fighting my way out of it. So maybe maybe they were the smart ones. Who knows?
I might be onto something.
Chris, you said you have two siblings, I think, that are both going into ministry. Does that make it more difficult?
So yes and no. It makes it a little more difficult for me because they haven't left the religion, but in certain things, my siblings are more progressive than my parents.
Oh, that's good.
It just comes with age.
Yeah.
The age difference, maybe, I don't know. Or the fact that they've been a little more exposed to some things than my family has, and with the advent of the internet.
Yep. Internet, baby. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so even over Christmas, my family and I, we were having a conversation. My fiance was there as well. And we were talking about trans rights at that point. Mm-hmm. And I was really surprised that my siblings and I were all a united front against my parents.
That's wonderful. I think having that conversation with your siblings is where I would take this next.
Okay.
And see where they do stand. I mean, they sound to me like safe people for you. And they sound like they accept you as a person if you've been able to share other things about yourself. So maybe that is the way to go.
Here's another rule. To reconnect with your family, consider talking with your siblings or other relatives first. It's an important step in strengthening your relationship with them. And moreover, it'll help you figure out the best approach. Maybe your siblings will back you up. Even if they don't, having that conversation with them is good practice, so it doesn't feel brand new when you actually have to have it with your parents. You know, if Patricia, since she's obviously farther along on that journey.
I'm pretty far.
Pretty far. You made it. Once you get out of the chastity cocoon, I think you
I know, you just
back,
bolt. But you just like run. You don't look back.
But was there ever a time where, like, I have a friend who left an Orthodox Jewish community, and she certainly missed certain things. I mean, she said, like, when there was a wedding or a funeral or a life milestone, it was like the whole community was there. And there were some things that she told me about that I sort of felt some longing for, you know, in the way that we live now. And so I'm sort of curious for both of you, are there things that you miss about that community you grew up in?
Yeah. I mean, I think that when you leave the Catholic Church, you miss that sense of communality. And going back, and anytime there's a funeral or a wedding or something like that, that is the time that I feel most Catholic, just when I'm raising my voice in song, as a religious person would say. It's just being with a bunch of people in like a basement that smells like old coffee and styrofoam, and you're sitting on like those tan folding chairs. These are things that we recognize on a very deep level if we've been raised in a faith.
I think the thing I miss the most is the community and the willingness to help each other.
Yeah, I like that too, that family feeling.
It's hard to leave something you've known for so long. I mean, I was a salesperson for a while, and as a salesperson, I was good at talking to people because I was a part of the church, moving around so much.
And I think it's very interesting that you talk about how you continue, like you find a job where you can do that. I mean, I've spent the last, 10 years of my life, 20 years of my life, just like writing a million page sermon. Like, what do we think I'm doing? You know, like, where do we think that I learned to think or learned about metaphor?
I'm still the same person. I'm just not Pentecostal. Look at what I've done. Look at the work that I do. Look at how I serve people in my community. It's all there. It's just, I'm not religious anymore.
Here's another rule. Acknowledge the skills and values that you still carry with you from your upbringing. Having those in the front of your mind, it won't just help you feel like you've gained something positive from the religion you left. It can remind your family that the you they know and love didn't just evaporate into thin air. You're still you. And with that in mind, we had Chris practice what he wanted to say to his father with Patricia.
Okay, I guess I would say, Dad, I know that this has been your life, helping people answer to a higher power and really develop their relationship, but that's not a path that I'm willing to go down. The path that I am willing to go down is helping people, applying the same skills and virtues you've instilled in me throughout my life and throughout my religious upbringing and bringing that to my community and helping people. Is that something that you can accept, or is it something that is going to be a continued tension between us?
I mean, I think that's really good. Oh, am I supposed to speak in a dad voice?
Up to you.
No, I'm not going to be silly about it, because honestly, that was so moving that, tears started to rise into my eyes. And if my child came to me saying something like that, maybe I'm also being moved by the fact that I didn't have that conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think that you're very brave. And I think that you are very eloquent. And I think that it would call to the humanity in another person.
Trust me, I won't be that eloquent if I ever do have this conversation.
Right? But now you've done it, and you actually have this, and it's something that can be a touchstone for you. And you build something like that up in your mind so much, I think, and you imagine all these conversations in the same way that you're imagining what they're saying about you behind closed doors. And the burden of that is not on you. Sometimes it is easier just to have the conversation. Sometimes it is easier to just show yourself that you can do it.
So practice what you want to say to your parents. Role play with a trusted friend or a sibling, or just write it down in a letter. Just having put it all out there in some form, it'll remind you that you'll be able to say it for real when it really matters. Chris, let's say you do have this conversation. What's the worst case scenario?
I guess a huge blow up between me and my parents that results in even more tension. I mean, it's already there. I don't think it can get that much worse. I'd say when my partner and I first moved in together, everything was unspoken, but you could feel the way everybody felt in the room.
Yeah, that's why I was laughing, because I wanted to ask. I was like, what was like, tell me about the Canadian blow up. Like, what did it look like? And sometimes the blow up is just like the feeling in the room, right? I mean, you were able to handle that, right? Like, you weren't destroyed in the blast.
No.
Honestly, probably that's the point at which you feel relief, because you're building a lot of these things up in your mind. And what I'm hearing again and again in the conversation is a determination to do this. Would you say that that is accurate?
At some point, I would like to talk about this with them.
Yeah, and you need to get yourself to that place. Mm-hmm.
Have you thought about the role that religion will or won't play in your wedding?
We have, and that's my father will be the officiant. That's
okay.
The plan at the moment.
Oh, I can talk about this in a second. Yeah. Go ahead, but I can talk about this. Yeah.
It won't be in a church. We're trying to keep it in a bit of a neutral location.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I'm most concerned of is often with these weddings, premarital counseling and religious premarital counseling is often required.
Oh, I can talk about this too.
Yeah, so that's the major thing that we're most concerned of.
My goodness. So we were married by my father and he was wearing full Catholic regalia. Mm-hmm. So I underwent the premarital counseling. We called it pre-cana. Mm-hmm. And you had to go to this like convention center with a workbook and like be told just really weird things about the pill, just like total mm-hmm. lies. Is that something your dad would do for you or would it be something more impersonal?
It wouldn't be with him. The current plan is to go to somewhere like a third party that wouldn't be a religious-based premarital counseling.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And again, the fact that you're thinking about making these concessions, you know, smoothing the way, thinking about how to make people comfortable. I mean, you've thought a lot about this, and I think that you should listen to that. To me, it feels like a conviction, and that's a little bit of a word that takes on more of a dimension for religious people. And if you do feel that it's a conviction that you are not a Pentecostal anymore, then it also is a responsibility. You know, it does lay something on your heart to do that. You can draw strength from it.
Yeah.
And here's our final rule. Talking with your parents about who you are and what you want out of your relationship, it takes a lot of courage. But try to lessen that pressure a little bit by remembering that bravery and aggression, they're not the same thing. It doesn't have to be an antagonistic fight for you to make your point. You're making progress by starting the conversation in the first place. And that's what's under your control.
I guess like a big overarching question would be, does it get easier? Like, dealing with this it's not going to go away for me. Even if I have this conversation, I know it's still going to continue. So does it really get easier?
It does get easier, which is not to say that you're not confronted with it again and again at unexpected times. So, you know, when I would come home for Thanksgiving, when I would go home for Christmas, you would face those feelings again, and I don't think that they ever really got any less fresh, because what you're experiencing in those moments is being a child again, a child mm-hmm. in the bosom of your faith. I think you want to keep some of that rawness of feeling, some of that vulnerability. This was your experience. This is what formed you as a person, and you don't want to lose touch with it. Mm-hmm. But I think it's maybe a lot more painful for you right now than it's going to be.
Thank you, Patricia.
Thank you for talking to me. I feel very, this, I think it was a beautiful conversation and I felt very moved by it. And like I said, I feel moved by your trust in mm-hmm. allowing me to talk to you about it. And like, yeah, I think I do make jokes and I think that is okay. But I hope that it's also true that respect comes through and a recognition of what you have gone through and where you have been. Because I feel like that is where I was. I feel that I felt the way you did back when I did the same thing myself.
Thank you to Chris for sharing his story with us. And thanks to Patricia Lockwood for her great advice. Be sure to look for her memoir, Priest Daddy, and her brand new novel, No One Is Talking About This. Do you have a problem that needs solving? Send us a note at howto@slate.com or leave us a voicemail at 646-495-4001. And if you like what you heard today, please give us a rating and a review and tell a friend. That helps us help more people. How To's executive producer is Derek John. Rachel Allen and Rosemary Belson produce the show. Our theme music is by Hannes Brown, remixed by Merritt Jacob, our technical director. June Thomas is Senior Managing Producer, and Alicia Montgomery is Executive Producer of Slate Podcasts. Gabriel Roth is Slate's Editorial Director of Audio. And Charles Duhigg is that guy you hear if you don't like new things and only listen to our old episodes. I'm David Epstein. See you next time.